This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight...
So far, with about a quarter of the ballots declared, Weah leads with 39% of the vote. Vice President Joseph Boakai of the Unity Party trails with 31%. Neither candidate is expected to break through the 50% margin needed to be declared the outright winner.
That's Bram Postumus reporting from Monrovia. Details coming up. Also in Kenya, three people have been shot and killed after protests turned chaotic, and 1,600 alleged Boko Haram terrorists are going on trial in Nigeria. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Kenyan news media report, three people have been shot and killed and two others sustained injuries after protests turned chaotic in Siaya and Migori today. The three were shot after they allegedly attempted to storm a police station in Bondo, the hometown of National Super Alliance leader Raila Odinga. Meanwhile, police used tear gas and protesters in Kenya's three largest cities today, Nairobi, Kisumu, and Mombasa. Opposition supporters who demand electoral reform say they will protest daily despite a government ban on the demonstrations in city centers. Earlier today, Odinga said the government is acting illegally and unconstitutionally in moving ahead with national elections on October 26th. On a visit to London, Odinga told the Associated Press that he supports his followers protesting because they are exercising their democratic rights. However, he said he is not urging them to do so. Odinga says he has withdrawn from the new election after the Supreme Court tossed out the results of the August presidential vote. He wants reforms to the National Election Commission. Former international football star George Weah has taken an early lead in Liberia's presidential elections as preliminary results are released from this week's voting. Authorities are urging people to wait for the official results before making conclusions based on what they read on the internet. Bram Postumus has more from Monrovia.
Grab Baz Akani. There's a total of 388 polling places in his county.
National Elections Commission Chairman Jerome Kokoya sat in front of a battery of microphones as he read the first preliminary results at a news conference. As he addressed reporters, Kokoya warned voters against coming to premature conclusions.
And we just wanted to, before we leave, to clarify that, as we have repeatedly said, only this commission can declare a winner of any public election. So far, this commission has not declared any winner. So the report going around that somebody or some people have already been elected, we are not aware of that.
The NEC chairman took no questions, but his comments came after a declaration of a winner was posted on the social media site Twitter. In the capital, people like local youth organizer Mickey Oldfield voiced concern about statements from Weah's Coalition for Democratic Change party, suggesting that the CDC was the winner.
My own disappointment is that statements coming from leaders of CDC, that CDC has won the election first ballot. That worried me a lot because our country, a lot of people are illiterate. If NEC announces something different, the support of CDC could go on a rampage. That's my fear.
So far, with about a quarter of the ballots declared, Weah leads with 39% of the vote. Vice President Joseph Boakai of the Unity Party trails with 31%. Neither candidate is expected to break through the 50% margin needed to be declared the outright winner, meaning a second round is a near certainty, just like in 2005 and 2011. Esther Ellen Coleman-Poor, a teacher at the medical school in central Monrovia, says she does not believe people are becoming impatient, awaiting the outcome.
For me, I'm only waiting for the result, the final result. That's the one I'm going to take. Everyone should wait and be patient and wait for the time. Anyone who wins, my president, anyone who wins, I just want peace.
International observers say the electoral process has been broadly free of irregularities so far. They will continue to monitor progress as vote tallying continues. The National Elections Commission is expected to announce further preliminary results later Friday, ahead of a final declaration. The eventual winner will succeed Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, Africa's first female elected head of state. She is stepping down after serving 2 6-year terms, as mandated by the Constitution. Bram Posthumus for VOA News, Monrovia.
Nigeria has put more than 1,600 alleged Boko Haram terrorists on trial and today sentenced 45 suspects to prison terms of up to 31 years. Chika Odua reports from Dakar on the challenges and expectations for this massive undertaking.
The largest trial of Boko Haram suspects in the history of Nigeria's ongoing fight against the terrorist group is underway at a military barracks in the north. More than 1,600 detainees held at a military base in the central state of Niger will be tried first, followed by 651 others held at the Giwa barracks in Maiduguri. The Nigerian Ministry of Justice has promised fair trials, saying that defendants have legal representation. But Osai Osijo, the Nigeria country director for Amnesty International, is expressing doubt.
Whether fair hearing has been respected in a particular issue, one of the things we look at is the trial public, right? And we know that this trial is closed to people and it's been closed to media and other observers. So that is the red flag.
The government says the media blackout is in the interest of national security. But human rights groups, including Amnesty International, say the public is being denied knowledge of how the trials are carried out. Rights activists have several questions about the trial, such as how the 4 judges assigned to the cases can handle such an enormous task. There are also questions about evidence. The Ministry of Justice recently acknowledged that poor investigation techniques, including an over-reliance on confessions, have made it difficult to conduct credible trials in the past. There are also accusations that Boko Haram suspects have been tortured in the overcrowded detention centers where most of them are held. Amnesty International says this will undermine the legitimacy of any statements or testimony obtained from defendants. However, these trials also signify a turning point in the Boko Haram insurgency, which has left a dire humanitarian refugee crisis in the Lake Chad region. To date, only 9 people have been convicted for links to Boko Haram. But some worry that the sentences of those found guilty will not be enough punishment for the crimes committed. Legal expert and barrister Modibo Bakari says that according to Nigeria's 2011 Anti-Terrorism Act and a 2013 amendment, the highest punishment for convicted Boko Haram terrorists is life imprisonment. He says it is not fair.
These people that commit heinous offenses that are of various magnitude, that they killed so many innocent citizens, destroyed properties, rendered so many villages where people homeless, refugees, in all these things, and then they now end up giving cooling in detention and even giving them sentences or life imprisonment. So the government will now, which means will take the responsibility of their feeding, accommodation for the rest of their life, and even giving them protection and medical and all the facilities.
As for people who are found innocent, the Ministry of Justice says they will undergo a de-radicalization program before they are returned to society. Chika Odua for VOA News, Dakar.
A number of migrant rescue operations have taken place over the past 2 days as migrants and refugees continue to make the perilous journey across the Mediterranean Sea. SOS Mediterranee, along with its medical partner, Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF, reports they performed 6 rescues, saving 606 lives. Those rescued include children and pregnant women. Reporter Josephine McKenna spoke with my colleague Kim Lewis about the rescue operations and tells us what some of the women report they experienced during their journey.
A big week for rescues in the Mediterranean, and an indication that people are still determined to make that crossing from North Africa to Europe in search of a better life, even though it's becoming more difficult. SOS Mediterranean and its partner Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders, performed 6 rescues and saved more than 600 people this week in many different operations. Now, on Tuesday, the MSF vessel Aquarius rescued 2 boats in distress east of Tripoli, just off the coast. Another 36 people were transferred from a merchant ship to Aquarius on Tuesday night. And then on Wednesday, Aquarius, that was already hosting survivors, intervened in the rescue of 350 other people on rubber boats east of Tripoli. So a big week, and these vessels, or at least the Aquarius vessel, has now docked in Sicily with these migrants on board.
I understand some of the migrants are children. Are they unaccompanied children?
A great deal of concern, because 40% of those rescued during these operations are minors. The youngest is only a baby, just a few weeks old. So around 240 children were rescued, some of them unaccompanied, and we also had 11 pregnant women among those rescued. Many of the rescued women came mainly from sub-Saharan Africa and reported that they had experienced repeated sexual violence and imprisonment in Libya on their way to Italy.
With the continued flow of migrants into Italy, is this a sign that the flow is not slowing down?
We have seen a dramatic slowdown in the last few months. The total number of migrants who have arrived in Italy this year is around 108,000 in total so far, and that's about 25% down on the figures from last year. So it is a dramatic fall. People are looking for alternative routes. We're seeing a little bit of an increase in those trying to reach Spain. The numbers are also down in Greece. They have received around 20,000 migrants this year. So we are seeing some changes, but this shows some determination on the part of these migrants. Many of the rescued people came from countries including Eritrea, the Ivory Coast, Mali, and Syria. So many of these people are fleeing very difficult conditions in their home countries, and even though some are being trapped in Libya, they don't seem to want to give up their efforts to try and reach Europe, even though it is much more difficult now.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with Kim Lewis from Rome. South Africa's Supreme Court of Appeal ruled today that President Jacob Zuma can face prosecution on nearly 800 corruption charges. The court ruled that the National Prosecuting Authority's reasons for dropping the case in 2009 didn't stand up under scrutiny. Zuma, who has been president since 2009, and other officials are accused of taking kickbacks in a 1990s arms deal. This case and other accusations of corruption against Zuma have cut into support for his African National Congress Party. The ANC has led South Africa since the end of white minority rule in 1994, but many South Africans, including ANC members, have called for Zuma to resign. Zuma's office said the president is disappointed by the court ruling. He has denied wrongdoing. You are listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. Past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. In Kenya, 3 people have been shot and killed after protests turned chaotic. Former international football star George Weah has taken an early lead in Liberia's presidential elections, but authorities are urging people to wait for official results. And 1,600 alleged Boko Haram terrorists are going on trial in Nigeria. 45 have been sentenced already to up to 31 years in prison. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. open conflict between government soldiers and rebels in the Democratic Republic of the Congo has mostly ceased, but Congolese women and girls continue to be raped in large numbers by both groups. VOA's Adam Phillips reports on the government's efforts to end these atrocities.
Soon after hostilities between his government and rebel soldiers formally stopped in 2013, DRC President Joseph Kabila appointed Jeanine Mabunda-Lioka, a former parliament member, to spearhead the government's effort to end sexual violence.
You cannot address the conflict and the return to peace without speaking about rape, so that it's a public fight, it's a public mobilization.
Rapes are committed by soldiers on both sides of the conflict. Lioka says many fighters use sexual violence as a weapon of war to intimidate the population, and others see rape as a reward for victory in battle. Lioka says that for them, women are among the choicest spoils of war.
Whatever is the motivation, we have to address that issue of rape. That's what counts. It's part of our history, but it's a history that we want to correct.
Bringing soldier rapists to justice can present daunting challenges, says Lioka. In the DRC, as elsewhere, it's traditional for soldiers to keep silent when one of them does something wrong. Lioka explains her office's strategy for dealing with that.
You had to get the highest level officials saying that we stand up against rape, we stand up to fight rape, rape is not acceptable. Then we work with the military justice to tell them that they have to link with all the stakeholders implied in this strategy.
Those stakeholders include community members, local and national leaders, and the victims themselves. Including them all is made more difficult by the social stigma often associated with rape. Lioka recalls a conversation she had with one military prosecutor in Goma. A soldier was convicted of raping a young woman who spoke out against him.
But when she went back in the village later, she was not well welcomed by his community because the community said, you got the conviction of your rapist, but now everybody knows that the village has some teen girls who have been raped. So she was so pressured by her community despite the conviction of the rapist, she commits suicide. That's the impact of the stigma. And if it's not addressed, if it's not healed, not only for the victim, but for the people surrounding the victim, you are a problem.
To address the problems of rape and stigma, the government initiated its Break the Silence campaign to build support for victims and denounce their suffering. Lioka says the support of traditional chiefs, called customs chiefs, has been crucial to the fight.
I was very surprised once upon a day in my office to see 42 customs chiefs to come to meet me and to say, we have heard about the Break the Silence campaign. We want to tell you that we are supportive of it. Because all of us, we have seen the trauma, the stigma, the consequences of raping women. So how can we help?
Other efforts in the Break the Silence campaign include a 24-hour hotline victims can call anonymously, billboard advertising, and grassroots educational efforts. Mobile courts also streamline the administration of justice for the accused. These strategies seem to be working. According to a 2016 United Nations Security Council report, the DRC reduced conflict-related sexual violence by half between 2013 and 2015. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
In Malawi, a local NGO, Nankoli Youth Organization, is helping communities access medical care in their area. The aim is to reduce long distances people travel to public health facilities. However, drug shortages are hampering the effort. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Until 2013, people in Nankoli township of Blantyre were traveling more than 20 kilometers to the nearest public hospital for free medication. The World Health Organization recommends a healthy facility should be within 5 kilometers of a community. Such a long distance was a burden to people like Enes Mateu. She says, for example, when one was pregnant, would travel as far as Zingwangwa Clinic at night. but sometimes medical workers there would refer them to Queen Elizabeth Central Hospital for further examination. But now this has changed thanks to the work of the Nanjoli Youth Organization. It is funding a clinic which is benefiting about 60,000 residents of Nanjoli and surrounding areas. Edina Lazaro is a resident of Nanjoli area. She said she's satisfied with the treatment she gets from the clinic, and this is her third time to visit this clinic. She says she first came with a sick child, then came alone, and this time around, she has also come alone. She says all this time she was getting the help she wanted. Medical workers said most common illnesses treated at the hospital include malaria, diarrhea, acute respiratory infection, and sexually transmitted infections. Dorothy Ntenge is a community health nurse at the clinic. She said it mostly faces drug shortages, largely because people from other areas came here for free medication.
Right now, we are running short of all the antibiotics. What we have is malaria treatment and a few bottles of hypertensive drugs.
Ntenje said efforts to refer the patients to other health facilities for medication do not help.
They come back again because in those health facilities, they don't have enough medication. So we advise them to buy, but they don't have the money. So most of the times they just stay in the villages. Then they come back to check if we have medications.
Meanwhile, the Nanjoli Youth Organization, which was established in 2004, seeks help from well-wishers. It currently receives funding from two groups based in Canada, the Stephen Lewis Foundation and Family and Friends. It also receives money from Bristol University in the UK and Harvard University in the US. George Ned is the coordinator for the organization. He said the clinic also provides voluntary HIV services to the youths.
For a young person to make a decision, sometimes they always make a decision quite quickly, and you find that maybe the time that they have made a decision, because of the distance, they might be able to change their decision to go for HIV testing. So we wanted to make sure that if they make a decision so quickly, they can actually know their status and make informed decisions.
Besides the health program, Ned said the organization has other projects in agriculture, education, and entrepreneurship. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
The Egyptian army confirms today that six of its personnel died in an attack on a checkpoint in North Sinai. At least four other soldiers were injured, and at least two of the attackers were killed in an attack that involved guns and explosives. It was not clear who the attackers were. Egypt has battled an insurgency by extremists linked to the Islamic State in the North Sinai for several years. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, Kurt Bynum, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Escape from the humdrum and dance to the beat of an African drum. Hi, I am David Van, host of The Voice of America's African Beat. splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. Join me Monday through Friday at 0900 and 2000 UTC for a soothing musical journey. I guarantee.